Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFRadio.org.
Hi, it's Rosie Starr, host of Farm and Country. Join us Saturdays at 10 a.m. on Radio Catskill for stories about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. Feed your ears some good radio produce. Listen local.
Thank you for listening to Radio Catskill during our summer fun drive. Our station relies on dedicated listeners like you who are willing to take that next step and actually become a supporter. Do your part to keep public radio free and available to everyone who needs it. Go to WJFFradio.org to make your donation now. That's WJFFradio.org. Thanks.
And thank you to everybody that's gotten us to this point where we have less than $20,000 to go towards our overall goal of $50,000. We're 61% of the way towards our goal, and we've got until early Saturday afternoon, about 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, to finish raising this last less than $20,000. Whatever you can give towards that will help us out. My experience with these fund drives, whom I am, Jason Dole, thank you so much for being here with me. My experience after doing a number of these fund drives is that the second half of the amount of funds that we need to raise goes quicker. Will it go quickly enough for us to finish raising what we need to raise by Saturday? I don't know. That's the part that I don't know. That's what I need your help with, and we could use your help right now. Call now to give what you can, 845-482-4141. 845-482-4141. Go to WJFFradio.org to make your donation there. We're getting started with the local edition, but as we do, we need to hear from you. So call now, make your donation, help us end this fund drive so we can keep focusing on bringing you this great radio. Ensure that this resource is here for everyone in the community. Give what you can and do give now. 845-482-4141.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
And live from Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is The Local Edition. I'm your host, Jason Dole. And tonight we're continuing local perspectives on the national news that everybody's talking about, involving the presidential election. Following the shocking news, the attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump on the weekend, the Republican National Convention, which kicked off last night, and the ongoing questions within the Democratic Party about their own nominee, current President Joe Biden. Tonight we'll have reactions and input from local activist Sandy Oxford, and the head of Sullivan County's Democratic Party, Ann Hart. And we're going to start things off with this reflection on how the assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump could have an impact on this presidential election, and where Democrats are still divided on the question of President Biden remaining at the top of the ticket. Tim Bruno spoke to WAMC News Director Ian Pickus about all of that earlier today and the impact on New York State politics. Here's that conversation now.
It seems to be sort of the favorite getting picked for the vice presidential slot, at least according to the eventual shortlist of the longer shortlist that we saw. I was closely watching to see what would happen with Congresswoman Elise Stefanik from Northern New York from the 21st District. She was on, according to a lot of reporting, the first shortlist of candidates. And when asked about it, she said that she would be happy to serve in a Trump administration if he's able to win the White House a second time. So when the news came down that J.D. Vance was picked for the ticket, I don't think it was a huge surprise. It seemed to be going in that direction in the last few days. And Elise Stefanik from Northern New York put out a very magnanimous statement about Vance being picked, said that she's gotten to know him on the campaign trail and looks forward to campaigning with him. Some analysis I've heard since the pick, you know, is slightly puzzled by the choice in some ways because Ohio is already trending red in the election. And Vance can be a polarizing figure on a national stage. But clearly, you know, Trump picked somebody who looked the part and someone he can get along with. And, you know, it adds a different dynamic here just because Vance is 39 and Trump is in his late 70s.
Elise Stefanik certainly lobbied, auditioned for the role, if you will. And, you know, it is unusual, I thought, just based on previous ways that presidential candidates pick strategically their vice presidential running mate. You usually look to someone who can deliver some delegates for you or make some inroads in a state where you're struggling. And as you said, Ohio seems to be pretty firmly in the red column. Elise Stefanik would have helped maybe in New York.
It's possible. She, when pledging the delegates to Trump on the first day of the convention in Milwaukee, said Trump will carry New York. Now, that's tough sledding. It's certainly possible, I suppose. It hasn't happened since 1984, the Ronald Reagan landslide year that New York went red. But looking at the 2022 gubernatorial election, where Lee Zeldin kind of overperformed, and we know President Biden, his popularity is low in New York, although Donald Trump's is still lower, according to public polls, than Biden's is. So we'll see if Republicans can flip New York State. If that ever happened, then that is game over for the Democrats in this fall election, obviously.
Let's talk about the assassination attempt on former President Trump on Saturday in Pennsylvania at his rally. How do you think that changes the dynamic of the campaign, specifically in New York State?
Honestly, I don't think we know yet. I think it's such a weird thing to have experienced as a nation. Just a stunning video, a stunning couple of days. Trump now shows up to the convention with a bandage on his ear. And when President Biden, who has spoken on the shooting a few times now, tried to reach for sort of unity and saying things like, you know, he spoke to Trump on the phone and he said political violence doesn't have any place in New York, in our politics, especially, I guess, in New York State. But, you know, I don't think we know what the lasting impact will be. There were some very dramatic photos, obviously, taken of Trump surviving the attempt. And the question, I think, for both sides now is, do they mean what they say about toning down political rhetoric? I tend to think that that is going to last a very short amount of time because the stakes are extremely high. There's no love lost between these candidates. And I think it is not in dispute that Trump as a candidate, as a president, has countenanced a lot of violent rhetoric in our politics. So now the shoe's on the other foot a little bit. And according to some reporting, you know, his speech at the convention on Thursday will kind of try to reach beyond that and talk about unity. You know, I've heard that about Trump before. He's been a public figure for a decade in presidential politics now. And I've heard about a lot of Trump pivots that didn't happen. So, you know, we'll see if that's real or not.
Do you think it has a bearing on some of these very competitive congressional seats in New York State, some of which flipped last election?
Yes, I do. And I think it's an enthusiasm question. We're talking about, you know, control of the U.S. House went through upstate New York last time around. People like Mike Lawler and Mark Molinaro, Claudia Tenney, perhaps, folks who, you know, were seen as potentially vulnerable in this presidential election year. And the question, and I think why Democrats, some of them have called on Biden to go, some of them in our coverage area, like Pat Ryan, who won two really close elections to Congress, why some of those folks are calling on Biden to get out of the race is fear about how the dynamics look here in July for November. If Trump is resurgent, if he has a ton of enthusiasm on his side, and if Biden is seen as potentially weak or unable to do the job for another 4 years and not inspiring Democrats who are having something of a civil war within their own party right now about keeping him on the ticket, suddenly those, you know, marginal first term candidates, they have an easier road to hold on to the seat. You know, if Trump wins the election at the top of the ticket, it makes it really hard for Democrats to flip the House of Representatives. And the Senate is already seen as a Republican pickup in all likelihood. So I think that's where you're seeing a lot of the unease from down ballot Democratic candidates who would like to see Biden get out. They're looking at the same polls we are, probably better internal polls showing how far behind Biden is right now. And one other point I'll make on that, if you see national polls that say it's a toss up, that it's a virtual tie, that's interesting, but that doesn't tell us how the electoral college is going to go. And if you're trailing by 2, 3, 4, and 5 points in very important strategic electoral college states that you won last time that you're in danger of losing this time, that shows you how the national race might go.
We spoke to Representative Molinaro in New York 19 in our listening area. He's not attending the convention in Milwaukee. He said it's because he has 4 kids. I actually thought it was sort of interesting, though, that you're in this very competitive district and you're not going to this main convention to show all of this support. Again, he said it's because he has kids, but I just thought that was an interesting point.
You know, and his path to Trump support has been a winding one. I ask him about it on every congressional corner conversation we have. You know, he said that he wrote in former Congressman Chris Gibson for president last time around. And this time he has endorsed Trump for election. I raised this with him in our last conversation. I said, you know, you've been in politics for your whole life. He was a teenage mayor, right? And he's been in the state assembly. He's been a county executive. He's been in Congress. And he's always pitched himself and promoted himself as a moderate who will, you know, bring both parties together and will not be a bomb throwing radical. And he'll be a middle of the road voice. He wants to hear disagreeing viewpoints, even if people don't like what he's doing, he thinks it's important. And I said to him, you have a lot more in common temperamentally with Joe Biden than you do with Donald Trump. And he said, it's not about temperament, it's about policies, and I'm backing Trump this year. And, you know, it's a Republican unified party in a way that we haven't seen during this whole primary process where people lined up to try to dethrone Trump, you know, people like Nikki Haley and Governor DeSantis. And look, he wins, at least in the Republican primaries within the party, the loyalty is there. And Molinaro is not a stupid politician by any stretch.
Prior to this assassination attempt on Saturday, all the conversation, all the chatter was about Biden leaving the race. Should he leave the race? New York Democrats are still pretty divided on that issue. That hasn't gone away.
I wonder what would have happened without the shooting on Saturday. Because you've seen these things before. It's very hard to get the horse back in the barn once it starts. The chatter has been there since the first debate. And it's grown because how does Biden at 81, who has halting public appearances, change the essential question about whether he's too old at this point? From some anonymous sourced reporting, you know, it's been said that former Speaker Pelosi is still kind of working the phones to try to get Biden off the ticket. But there was a moment, I thought, where it seemed like the dam might break. You know, people like Lieutenant Governor Delgado, who's not even on the ballot this year, said it's time for Biden to step aside. You had people like the aforementioned Pat Ryan, who has been a strong Biden supporter, saying, look, you know, I can see the scoreboard right now. It's not looking good for November. And the question is, number one, Biden has said 5 or 6 times now, he's not getting out of the race. So if that's true and settled and he means it, no matter what the polls show, at a certain point, they've got to start playing with the cards they have. And the second question is, you know, is Biden seeing the same data that the rest of them are? Nobody 4 months out from the election would be trying to change their nominee if they thought they were winning.
But Governor Kathy Hochul came out very firmly behind President Biden recently, last few days.
Yeah, and multiple times. And she met with him in the White House when the governors went there. Interestingly, you know, the Massachusetts governor, Maura Healey, was also in that governor's meeting, and she had a different take. Like, you know, she was not convinced that Biden is able to win and to do this job for another 4 years. You know, Hochul has been a strong supporter, and I think a lot of these Democrats are between a rock and a hard place right now. If you stick with Biden and he loses and you lose control of the House and you lose control of the Senate and you lose a lot of key governorships, that makes 2025, you know, look pretty bleak. But if you change a candidate a month out from the convention, that's also an unknown at this point. You know, polls are polls. They're a snapshot of a moment in time. They're not predictive of what happens on election day necessarily. We frankly don't know if another candidate would do well against Donald Trump or not. I think the question that they're grappling with right now is, can they change the essential dynamics of this race? And I think it's very, very difficult when you're seeing polls that show 4 out of 5 people think Biden is just too old. How you get off of that baseline at this point? There's been so much attention on these interviews that he's done, these broadcast interviews and his public appearances. But is he a magician? Does he have a rabbit to pull out of a hat to suddenly say, hey, I'm not old anymore? I don't see that happening.
Ian Pickus from WAMC, news director there, and our friend from the New York Public News Network. I am sure we will be speaking with you again soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great.
And Ian Pickus spoke with Tim Bruno earlier this morning. This is the local edition. We've got local takes on the current state of the 2024 presidential race. And next up, we have Ann Hart, chairperson of the Sullivan County Democratic Party, who also spoke to Tim Bruno earlier today. And they started off getting her take on the pick, the Republican Party's pick, Donald Trump's pick for his running mate and potential vice president, J.D. Vance.
It's an interesting choice. I think it's a telling choice, and it sort of shows the direction that the Republican Party is headed based on his book, his experience, his life. So it's an interesting choice, and I think it makes it clearer what the Republican ticket is all about.
And what do you think it's all about? What do you mean by that?
I think what it means is that it shows the agenda of the Republican Party as it is today more clearly. It shows support for the erosion of individual rights and freedoms. It shows a more populist view in the sense of not populist for the people. And I think it shows that, you know, the economic policies will be very different and possibly harmful to regular working people. So that's essentially what I mean. He's, you know, he is a good speaker, like former President Trump, and he is, you know, can definitely sort of gin up their base. And, you know, we'll see what happens.
How do you think the assassination attempt on former President Trump at his rally in Pennsylvania on Saturday will impact the election? It's already changed campaigning. Certainly a topic of national conversation right now. How do you think it impacts the election?
I think it remains to be seen. Even, you know, the election is 115 days away. A lot of things can happen. It seems that in our sort of 24-hour news cycle that we live in these days, things come, things go. And it remains to be seen, you know, how lasting an impact it is. Obviously, it's a terrible thing. Political violence, gun violence, verbal violence, all of that is unacceptable and should be unacceptable to everybody. So the hopeful part of me hopes that more people have learned the lesson that to try and solve things by violence, be it gun violence or any other violence, is not the way to go. It's not, you know, it's not what our country should be standing for. And so I'm hopeful for that impact. How it affects the race or the campaign remains to be seen.
Prior to this happening, the constant conversation was about President Biden and whether or not he should remain in the race and whether he should stay at the top of the ticket. And even some New York Democrats are questioning that. How are you feeling at the county level in terms of President Biden and his performance and whether he should stay or not?
Well, full disclosure, I'm a pledged Biden delegate. to the national convention. You know, that has to be said before I go into anything else. I mean, I think, look, the Democratic Party is the party that has a lot of discussion. We're very wide and varied in our opinions. But at the end of the day, we're a family. And these are family discussions, some of which are public, some of which are not public. People have been able to air their concerns and their thoughts, this and that. But at the end of the day, we have a process. It's a legal process, and a party process, and we've gone through that process. Joe Biden is our candidate. I believe that everyone will coalesce around him at the end of the day. And I also believe it's healthy to have these discussions among ourselves and even with the public. It's healthy for people to discuss these things, but reality and the way that things actually work, if there was to be a different candidate, that should have been decided months and months and months and months ago. That ship sailed, and Joe Biden stands on his record. I stand on his record. He's done a remarkable amount of work in the last 3.5 years, all of which has benefited the American people. Our economy is much better than it was. He brought us out of COVID. He brought us through the rocky way of getting out of an unprecedented economic situation. Jobs are better. Jobs are higher than they were pre-COVID. There actually is infrastructure happening.
We're having a little trouble with your line there, but I think we got your point there. If there's this uncertainty at the top of the ticket, how does that impact races down ballot, particularly in some pivotal congressional races, also at the state level? How do some of these things perhaps impact the local level?
I think right now they don't. I've been out canvassing a few times. I've been talking to voters, and we're not talking about what's going on at that level. We're canvassing for our three candidates, Josh Bradley for Congress, Michelle Frazier for 51, and Paula Kay for Assembly District 100. And those are the conversations that we're having as we go door to door with the voters. It will be clear that after the Democratic National Convention, Joe Biden is our candidate. But right now here locally, regular voters, the people we're talking to, they weren't bringing up Biden and Trump. They were bringing up their local issues and what our candidates can do versus what the candidates in office now have been able to do or have done. And those are the conversations we're having with voters. They're the ones ultimately at the end of the day who have to come.
Ann Hart, chair of the Sullivan County Democratic Committee, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm sure we'll be talking to you as we move closer to November.
All right. Thank you, Tim.
This is the local edition, and we're continuing with our local reactions and takes on the current state of the 2024 presidential election. And I spoke with Sandy Oxford, political activist associated with the Working Families Party, Hudson Valley Labor Federation. And we talked a lot about the election. We only have time for part of this conversation. So what I wanted to focus on, because it just happened last night, was Teamster President Sean O'Brien speaking at the Republican National Convention. And we started off with that take here in this clip. So here's Sandy Oxford. Have you been watching any of the convention that just started as we're talking, started last night?
I did watch the convention, and I watched the historic speech from Secretary Treasurer of the Teamsters, of the National Teamsters Union, O'Brien. And, you know, that was very interesting.
Well, that was exactly where I was going with this question is, did you see Sean O'Brien from the Teamsters give that speech? It seems like the Republicans are trying to pivot and get some of that labor vote. I know you're very active in labor. What was your reaction to that speech and this effort?
What I know, because the first thing I did was call my Teamster leadership friends, and I know that, you know, and it's no secret that he's basically divided his union. There's a whole meme war going on right now, and Sean O'Brien is at the center of it. There's good reason why the Republicans, why this is the first time that the Teamsters have spoken there, because the Republicans have led in establishing right to work. Right to work for less. The Republicans, with the support of the National Chamber of Commerce, have done so much to draft anti-worker legislation. At the hands of the Republicans and the National Farm Bureau have done so much to be sure that things like exclusions to laws that would protect domestic workers in this country and farm workers in this country never get to see the light of day. Okay? That is what the Republicans do. And that is what Labor knows. So for him to go there last night was, he brought that upon himself. I doubt he's going to run unopposed his next, internally in his national election. I doubt he will run unopposed because I don't know. I don't know if he's making things worse by what he is doing. And Trump is romancing him. I got to hope that this dude is a little bit swifter from the state of Massachusetts, you know, with a little more savvy to recognize a con when he's enmeshed in one.
But if what he's done has, as you say, like, you know, split his union, that would indicate that in some regard, from the Republican perspective, it was successful in getting more support from Labor for Republicans.
Yeah, yeah. In that regard, yeah. I mean, we have to see. We have to see what happens. We have to see what direction things are going in. I think that the other camp is going to hopefully do better. Because they could have always done better. And, you know, Biden did deliver. He wasn't impeccable. The one thing that struck me that Sean O'Brien spoke about was some of the weakness of the rail deal that did not take into account some of the real workers' violations. Remember during the to avoid the strike that was happening?
Yeah.
And we all learned across the United States that these people didn't have paid sick days. I mean, it was crazy. It was crazy. And those are very basic bread and butter things that we expect. I'm glad that in one regard, because C-SPAN is always so much better to watch these things from because they span the audience and you get to see who is not clapping, who was sitting down, who was on their phone texting and very disinterested in this historic speaker at the Republican National Convention. And I know that the heads of the Chamber of Commerce were not happy. I know that the Farm Bureau and all of the corporatists that were there, because he did call out the Waltons, he did call out Amazon, he did, you know, for Pete's sake. You know, these folks are picking our vice presidents and stuff like that. What's his name from Tesla and X, you know, leaning in, putting his thumb on the scale to pick a vice president. And then in the same regard, violating workers' rights because he was, you know, the Elon Musk, he does not have a very good track record either with labor. So it's complicated. I hope he's ready. I wish him luck. I think he made some really incredible bold moves with his union. He got into power because he wanted to decentralize the power from the top and return it back to the members. When the union starts acting like an employer, then that's the problem. And he was part of that whole thing, returning things back to one member, one vote.
You know, taking this political moment as a whole, I'm wondering what you're going to be looking for from the Biden campaign and the Democratic Party on one hand, or what are you going to be watching for with the Trump campaign and the Republicans on the other hand? What are the next things that you're looking to see happen, want to see happen, or afraid of seeing happen?
Gosh, I want to be sure that we are really united and that we have faith that the person that is at the top of that ticket is capable and able to do the work. And that there's just no doubt that we're going to be able to get off the finish line because the person at the top of the ticket is not dragging the ticket down and is not going to harm any other parts of the government. Because I understand what all the defecting congressman people were so alarmed about. I understand the anxiety that they feel. And I also understand that we have processes, and I also respect these processes. As much as I complain about politics, there are processes enmeshed in all of these conventions and meetings and all of this, you know, what feels very parochial type of process that has to happen that I just have to have faith that we're going to get through this and we will have a strong nominee at the top of the ticket that is going to lift all the boats up.
All right. Well, Sandy, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about all of this today. And I'm sure we'll be checking in with you again before we actually get to November.
Well, I hope that was okay. Thank you.
I think it was great. Thanks. And Sandy Oxford of the New York Working Families Party, activist and labor advocate Sandy Oxford. That's only a portion of the conversation. And I also spoke to her about her reaction to the attempted assassination.